Did you get enough sleep last night? Did you toss and turn or lie awake worrying? If you did, you're not alone. One in three American adults doesn't get enough sleep, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Joining us now is Dr. William Dement, who's an emeritus professor and the founder of the Stanford Center for Sleep Sciences and Medicine. He's known as the father of sleep medicine. Dr. Dement, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
And why do so many people complain that they can't sleep?
Well, it is not a single type of complaint. There are many reasons to complain, and you know, the really important thing is to arrive at the correct reason and then do something specific to deal with it.
What are the most common reasons for trouble sleeping?
Well, I think that you know, if you say trouble sleeping, that is not really insomnia. There are many sleep problems, and the most serious problem is called obstructive sleep apnea, where for a variety of reasons, you stop breathing when you fall asleep and you have to wake up to breathe, and your sleep is very disturbed, and then you have sleepiness and drowsiness in the daytime. And I think that evaluating how you function when you're awake is one of the key things, because even if you think you have disturbed sleep or you're not falling asleep quickly enough, if you feel fine and wide awake and alert all day long, you know, forget it. It's not a problem.
How many hours of sleep should you be getting each night? I mean, we hear always, you know, between 6 and 8 hours of sleep, but is that your range?
Well, I think that's a reasonable figure. I think, however, what I advise is every single person should try to determine their own unique sleep requirement. And again, you do that by sleeping a certain amount or being in bed a certain amount of time and then seeing how you function during the day. You know, if you eat lunch and then you can hardly stay awake, there's a problem.
Well, we see somebody like President Trump going to bed clearly pretty late based on his tweets and then waking up pretty early based on his tweets. Is he getting enough sleep in your view?
Well, I'd be a little bit skeptical, but I think you don't really know for sure how much sleep people are getting. They often are, you know, not correct in telling you. I might say I sleep 6 hours a night when I really sleep seven, but I don't really keep track of it that closely. And I think that, you know, you can have ups and downs. You can sleep a little less, a little more. You might take a nap, but very few people keep track of it over a sufficiently long period of, you know, a large number of days to really pin it down.
What are your thoughts on naps?
I think if you are sleepy and something is coming up that's going to require alert behavior, taking a nap is a good thing. I personally have begun to nap as I've gotten older. I think naps are good.
How long do you nap for?
Oh, and you know, you say an hour, it could be 40 minutes, it could be even a 10-minute nap can revitalize you.
Now, I've heard that one of the things that you should not do right before you're trying to go to bed is watch TV or look at a cell phone or something with that kind of light.
Well, if you have a problem falling asleep, that's very important. I wouldn't generalize and say absolutely 100% of individuals must not watch TV, because for some people, TV is kind of the, especially if they have an automatic turnoff, is kind of a something that lulls you to sleep. My own personal system is to pick a radio program that is very, very dull.
Not this one, I hope.
No, this is a very exciting one. But, you know, it distracts you from any concern. Well, why aren't I falling asleep? And I think many times people can fall asleep without realizing it and then wake up later and think they've been awake all that time.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Dr. William Dement, who's the founder of the Stanford Center for Sleep Sciences and Medicine. And Dr. Dement, what happens to our brains and our bodies when we sleep?
Well, the body relaxes. There's no question about that. There are two kinds of sleep, which is very important to understand, and they're as different from one another as both are from wakefulness. One state of sleep is called rapid eye movement sleep or REM sleep, and that's about 25% of the night, and the remainder of sleep, 75% on the average, is simply non-REM sleep. Nightmares tend to occur in REM sleep. Hmm. I mean, uniquely, I guess. And night terrors that are more typical of young children would occur in non-REM sleep.
And do they tend to mean something? Do you think when somebody has a nightmare or a night terror that there's something deeper behind that?
Sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't. Although to say there isn't, you know, is always uncertain. You can't ever be sure. But it's fun to try to interpret your dreams, whether they have, you know, vitally important meanings or not. I think is still an unresolved issue, and in a certain sense, it's still an unresolved issue. Why do we dream? Well, the easiest reason for that is that during REM sleep, the brain becomes very active. And at the same time, mechanisms unique to REM sleep paralyze the body so that you, in effect, the brain is telling you to run if you're running in a dream, but your body is paralyzed and cannot move. And the muscle that is not paralyzed, thank goodness, is the diaphragm. So obviously you continue breathing, and the intrinsic eye muscles. So you can have these rapid eye movements, which I think, and I think it's still a little controversial, but I think that some of the eye movements are clearly looking at the dream. We once had woke someone whose eyes were moving back and forth very regularly. He was dreaming of watching a tennis match, and we actually took him out to watch honest-to-God match and got the same eye movement pattern.
Hmm. Interesting. So is it possible to catch up on sleep? If you get only 4 or 5 hours of sleep one night, can you make up for that by sleeping 10 hours the next day and all is well?
Well, you certainly can catch up on sleep. You don't have to do it minute for minute.
Do you think it's a good idea for people to take medicine if they can't sleep?
Well, certainly in the short term, if it's really a crisis, I think that sleeping pills have kind of got a bad rap. Today's sleeping pills are very safe, very effective. And if there's really a need to get, you know, decent sleep because of some crisis in your life, I would certainly not suffer insomnia as opposed to taking a currently available sleeping medication.
What about something like melatonin? A lot of people say, oh, take melatonin if you can't sleep.
Well, we've actually studied it, and it works for some, and it doesn't work for others. The one advantage it has is you don't need a prescription.
Now, you have mentioned a number of times in this interview about sort of traumatic life experiences connected to sleep. Is that typically the reason why somebody can't sleep is because something bad has happened?
If something bad happens, it is often disturbed sleep. It's hard to know just how much stress it takes. Some people can sleep through anything. Other people, the slightest upset in their lives, and they'll go to bed and start to worry. One kind of clever little approach to that I always admired was to schedule a specific worry time. You know, like around 6 p.m., you have to spend 1 hour worrying about all of the problems you have in your life, and then do not worry if you can actually force yourself when you go to bed.
I talked to somebody recently who did exactly that. Schedule the worry time. And what she said was, of course, you go to your worry time and then you don't worry about anything because you get bored after a minute of worrying.
That's right. The worries aren't as bad as you thought. Everything looks worse at night.
So you've been studying sleep for a long time. Has the science of sleep evolved a lot in the 50-some years you've been looking into it?
Well, I would, yes, if you take the whole 50 years, it's evolved tremendously. In 1970, there were no sleep clinics in the United States, and as far as I know, anywhere in the world. We opened the world's first sleep disorders clinic here at Stanford in the summer of 1970. Now there are sleep clinics are everywhere, and I think in general, if sleep and falling asleep and getting enough sleep is appears to be a serious problem, the correct thing to do is to go to a sleep disorders clinic.
That's Dr. William Dement, who is an emeritus professor and the founder of the Stanford Center for Sleep Sciences and Medicine. Dr. Dement, thank you.
You're very welcome.